LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Listen without limits. Unchain your brain. Change your thinking. Change your life. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host, Greg Moffat, and my guest today is James Howard Kunstler. To quote the opening lines from the 1979 science fiction series, The Quatermass Conclusion, in the last quarter of the 20th century, the whole world seemed to sicken. Civilized institutions, whether old or new, fell, as if some primal disorder was reasserting itself. And men asked themselves, why should this be? Fast forward to the first quarter of the 21st century, and we find ourselves in much the same quandary, living in what seems like an increasingly absurd dystopian movie. To quote my guest, everything organized at a gigantic scale is steaming toward failure. Big governments, giant companies, the huge capital investment firms, global shipping, energy production, chain retailing, mass motoring, big electricity, big medicine, big education, big anything. But there's more to our predicament than mere systems failure. Consumerist culture tells us that life has no meaning or purpose beyond material concerns, and led to a crisis in our collective consciousness, manifesting nihilism and insanity on a hitherto unimaginable scale. Can we unmake this unhuman death wish before it's too late? Hello and welcome, James, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Greg.
James, we've spoken several times before in the past. Last time was back in March 2020, talking about living in the long emergency. We've also spoken about your book published many years ago, The Geography of Nowhere. Coming up, you've just put out a new anthology of blog posts. You can tell us about that in a moment. It's called Crazyland: Dispatches on the Great American Derangement of Our Time. Before we jump into our chat, just give a very quick potted bio for listeners who may not be familiar with your work.
Well, I'm the author of about 20 books, best known for some of my nonfiction, The Geography of Nowhere, which is about the fiasco of suburban development, mostly about the USA. The Long Emergency, which came out in 2005, which is about the really about the economic collapse that we're now facing. It just has taken almost 20 years for it to occur after I predicted it. I wrote a book called Too Much Magic, and the subtitle was Wishful Thinking, Technology, and the Fate of the Nation, which might give you an idea what it was about. I published a popular four novel series called The World Made by Hand series. And those four novels, all of them have different title, are a depiction of what life would be like in a small town, a village in America's New England region after an economic collapse. And I did that because I wanted readers to really kind of sensually understand what it would feel like to live in that new disposition of things. So I publish my blog twice a week on Mondays and Fridays. It comes out at 10 o'clock in the morning, New York time, on Monday and Friday, and it's pretty popular. And that's what I do these days.
Okay, you just reminded me, actually, that aside from the two interviews that we did previously that I mentioned, we also did one around Too Much Magic. Listeners can find those linked up on this interview page at LegalizeFreedom.com. It's all there. So, well, today is quite a momentous day, I think, because this is a Thursday, the 27th?
7th.
27th.
Correct.
And it is tonight, I believe, that the first debate is due to take place between U.S. presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Is that correct?
Yes, it's the greatest battle since Godzilla and Mothra got
together.
Yeah, exactly. Only this one's between Godzilla and a potato chip.
Well, so we're going to be, obviously, we're going to start talking about the political situation, your side of the pond. But listeners, don't tune out immediately. We're going to be talking about a lot of other stuff. This isn't just US politics, but I had to start there because today being what it is. Now,
Yeah, it's momentous.
you've written, and I've agreed that I said, well, surely the Democrats cannot allow this shell of a man Biden to go up on in television, albeit I understand not in front of a live audience. But how can they allow this to happen? But I don't know what the latest intelligence you have is, but it looks like it's going ahead.
Oh, it's going ahead all right. It's a little bit skewed in terms of fairness, in the sense that there are two viciously anti-Trump people monitoring or conducting the debate, and one of them, in fact, Dana Bash, her husband is a CIA employee who was a part of the Russiagate hoax. So that's pretty sketchy. And of course, Jake Tapper of NBC, I guess, has made no secret of his loathing for Mr. Trump, and he's expressed it many times. And he has spread many untruths about him, and fake news stories about him. The whole thing's very unfortunate. But I think Mr. Trump can handle himself, and he's prepared. We have been advised by the our shall we say conservative advisors not to underestimate ex yes not to underestimate Joe Biden, that he can, if they jack him up on enough chemicals, he can probably perform for the roughly 38 minutes that he will have to talk within the hour and a half of the debate, minus the many commercial breaks and Mr. Trump's remarks. So he may be able to put together quite a few coherent sentences. The problem for Mr. Biden is that no matter how jacked up he is, he has no record that he can defend. Everything that he's been doing for the last 3 years has helped wreck our country and destroy institutions. I think that if Mr. Trump remains calm and simply spells these things out for the audience and for Joe Biden so that he can hear about them maybe for the first time, because I'm not even quite sure he's getting correct information about the economy. I think that he'll do a good job. If he starts acting childish, that'll be another matter, and he's capable of acting childish.
Yeah, well, of course, you're very correct to point out Biden's record, such as it is. So it's one thing if he goes up on stage and poops his pants and then walks off, stage right just in a daze. But it's another if he is relatively coherent. But of course, the question then is, as you say, will Trump, behave himself? Will he just steady himself, stay on point? And not get too carried away with his own, as he does sometimes, he can be his own worst enemy.
Sure.
So,
I think that part of the deal will be that my guess is that Trump will probably have better preparation than Joe Biden. And I simply think he's got better advisors, and they're more intelligent. And a lot of the people around Joe Biden are really kind of out to lunch. And then there's the fact that he himself has severe limitations. So I think that'll be a big deal.
now, sitting where I am and looking at this situation, and this will probably sound hopelessly naive to someone like yourself, and even though, as I say, I'm an avid re reader of your output on all topics, including US politics, but I was thinking, like, there's a question of, like, can, and I've got American work colleagues actually, we talked a little bit about this, about is this really the best that the two main sides in the political system over there can come up with? Aren't there younger, more
Oh, it's
capable people?
pitiful.
Yeah, exactly. But in from the Democratic point of view, I was thinking, like, why are they pushing on with what looks like this suicide mission? Wouldn't it, sometimes in battle, you just think we just need to temporarily withdraw, regroup, rearm, and come back. Let the enemy have a bit of ground. We can retake that. So Isn't there any element within the democratic establishment that was saying, we just let this one go, let this one
Well,
go,
Greg, it really is baffling. It is absolutely impossible to understand why the Democratic Party would want to put this guy up for re-election. He's clearly incapable, and he's clearly done an enormous amount of damage to the United States in every way imaginable, to its reputation, our system of law, our institutions, our cultural habits. He's like the Jacobins to the third order of magnitude. You know how the Jacobins during the French Revolution worked really hard to disorder French society by doing things like changing the number of days in the week and the number of months in the calendar and all sorts of other things that they perpetrated. But their opponents got onto them fairly early in the game, and after a year of being in power, they got kicked out and got their heads chopped off, and that was the end of the Jacobins. This particular faction is even more bewildering. Either they represent some kind of strange globalist demonic cabal, which in itself raises, strange kind of metaphysical questions that sound too weird to be true, or there's some kind of sickness in the zeitgeist itself, and that may be. I'm coming around to the view that the collective consciousness and unconsciousness of a nation or a people or a group can be subject to some pretty strange influences that seem to be beyond the mere sum of their collective psychologies. And we're all baffled by this. Why would this party want to put up this guy who's clearly incapable of doing the job? And it was true 4 years ago when they first put him up, and he ran that miserable, stupid campaign out of his basement. And now, when he can barely walk across the lawn from his helicopter to the White House. So there you go. On the other hand, I must say that the affairs of the Europeans, to some extent, are almost more baffling than the things that are going on in the USA. And that, too, seems to be a strange zeitgeist issue that the best efforts of a well-intentioned opposition can't do anything about.
Yeah,
It's interesting to see Mr. Farage emerge because, from my point of view, overseas, watching British politics in recent years, he really seems to be the only coherent voice on the scene. And yet he has been unable to really emerge with any kind of force until now.
yeah, well, I
And
mean,
I'm.
he was on the scene a few years ago with
Oh,
UKIP,
yeah.
the UK Independence Party, and that looked like actually it was going to be a thing.
Yeah,
But
and then it's flopped.
exactly. So we'll see if that happens again. We'll get to the European situation very shortly. It's fundamentally the same phenomenon or manifestation of whatever it is you mentioned.
Yeah.
You start to get into Jungian territory, don't you, really? And the idea of
Exactly.
egregores, the idea that a nation has a sort of oversoul that can become, corrupt. And
In
I think
fact,
that
I'm reading a wonderful book about it by a guy named Simon Sheridan. He's an Australian, and he wrote a book called The Devouring Mother. The Devouring Mother is a Jungian archetype, and it basically incorporates the properties of a cluster B personality mother. The kind of mother who sets a child up for extreme dependency and failure, and the kind of mother who will do something like the Munchausen by proxy syndrome, where they get off on presenting their child as being sick and carting the child around to doctors and hospitals when the child is not sick. And that's definitely a thing. That's something something that has been observed. And so Sheridan's thesis is that this oversoul of a nation can adopt the ways of an archetypal figure and really work a lot of evil hoodoo on the nation.
Did you?
Oh, and there's another component to it, which is that the citizens, a certain portion of the citizens become the compliant, abused child who tries desperately to please this devouring parent who cannot stop harming it. And, you get into a dynamic relationship that is extremely negative. And that's exactly what we saw with the people who still are getting their, ninth booster shot of a vaccine that practically everybody has heard is not safe. And in fact, is probably extremely harmful. And it's an amazing phenomenon. Coming out of the 1950s and 60s, as I did as a child and a young man, this was a period after World War II where we really thought that we had arrived in some kind of golden age of psychological stability for the human race. Maybe we considered the Soviets to be somewhat aberrant. But on the whole, as far as Western civilization was concerned, we thought that we were doing pretty well and that we had kind of abolished all the devils that had plagued Western civ for centuries. But, I'm so fascinated by the illusion of all that, because now we're finding ourselves in an age that's every bit as crazy as some of the medieval ergot poisoning episodes and other hysterias, classic hysterias that took place in earlier times. And I've never seen people behave so crazily as we're seeing now.
I don't think we banished any demons whatsoever. I just think that we told ourselves a different story collectively. And in terms of like from the scientific revolution, the industrial revolution, then, materialism as a cosmology and also as a worldview. So the 50s and 60s, you were talking about post-war boom. It was all cars and holidays and blenders and washing machines and TVs and the devils and the
atomic
demons.
Energy and hopes for the future.
Our psychology was still the same. It's just that we were just relating to the world differently because of that. And of course, when that material stuff started to crack and crumble and those systems come under pressure, we found ourselves back facing the same, like inner darkness yet again. So,
With the United States, it was actually a very long and corrosive 5 decades, including the Vietnam episode, the fiasco of Vietnam. That really started the institutional failure in the USA, and it's taken an awful long time to unwind. But, it's now the damage seems to be accelerating and ramifying so that every problem with an institution makes the other problems of other institutions nearby proximate to it even worse.
Did you by any chance read John Michael Greer's book, The King in Orange?
I actually did. I can't say that I remember it that well, but I follow Greer a little bit, and I talk to him once in a while. He's got an interesting mind.
Yeah, it's just the reason I mentioned it is we're talking about Jungian ideas, and I think there's more to be gleaned from looking askance at what's going on in the world at the moment in terms of politics, economics, culture, society and trends, even technology, looking under the hood of this thing inside ourselves. I think there's a lot more we can learn, but of course that sort of analysis is not at all popular. Everything's superficial literally and metaphorically,
yeah.
So I think that's
bound into this globe of logical positivism and all the early 20th century kind of scientistic claptrap ideology. But I also would say that I think you're simply less naive than I am. Having grown up in that extraordinarily hopeful period of the 1950s and fairly peaceful. I just think that what seems normal to me has really been bygone for quite a long time. And people who were born in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you know, don't feel the same way about it that I do.
Yeah, well, we didn't get a microwave or a video recorder until 1985. You know what I mean? So, and we thought that was the latest thing. But of course, microwaves and video recorders been available in the States for long. I'm using that just as a, you know, little silly bellwether things. But
yeah, I remember when I got my first telephone voice message machine. It was like 1985, and I was a starving bohemian at the time. I had so much fun with that thing. The first message I put on it was something like, hello, you've reached the offices of God Almighty. I'm not here right now. Actually, I'm everywhere. But if you leave me a message, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't think we got a answering machine until like well into the 90s. So anyway, I mean, that brings us then, I guess, over to my side of the pond in Europe. But whatever's occurring this side of the Atlantic is happening everywhere and all over the world with different manifestations. But one of the big talking points, or the sort of buzz phrases, things that people are ragging on here in the media and the political scene, is the rise of the right, you know, quote unquote. Now, I looked at a couple of UK media articles concerning this forthcoming US presidential debate, and the last one I read was in The Guardian, a guy being critical of Trump. And I was reading through it, quite a short article, but it just had nothing. It just said when the debate was happening and extolling the virtues of Biden. And at the end, all it could do was once again talk about Trump, what he stood for. And, you know, when was the last time we had something like this? You know, and just basically didn't say it in so many words, but it was Nazi Germany again. It's just Trump and Hitler. And it's all that they've
got. And of course, you know, they're just projecting their own behavior because, you know, if anybody is totalitarian, it's the left in America and Europe. You know, they're the ones who are trying to shut down free speech. They're the ones who are using police state tactics to, you know, do home invasions of the FBI and the Stasi-like national police operations. They're the ones who are disordering the institutions. They're the ones who are using lawfare, which is a term in America that we use for, you know, trumped up, cooked up, false charges, using the machinery of law to persecute your political opponent. So they're doing all of that. And also they're very avid for World War III. And, you know, the strange thing is that I was a registered Democrat in that party for 40 years. And, you know, so I started in the 1960s, and the Democrats were the party of peace in those days. Now they're the party of war. They flipped on everything. And yet they, you know, they're using the psychological, the sick, psychotic cluster B psychological projection to project all of the evil acts that they're undertaking on their opponents. And the other part of that that is equally astounding is how ineffectual their opponents have been on the right.
Well, the some of the establishment in the UK and Europe, I've been getting into quite a lot of bother recently. You know, it's just like just the latest step in a sort of trend. You know, but their kind of charade has become increasingly hard to sustain. Like Emmanuel Macron in France having tremendous problems. The Irish Premier Leo Varadkar recently, a creature of the globalists, recently resigning. So it's actually, you know, we're starting to see stuff, you know, actual kinetic action in the political scene as opposed to just the threat of.
You are, after all, having elections sooner than we are.
Yeah, exactly. So
France and UK.
Yeah, the UK election's coming up very soon. I mean, that's another, it has parallels with the US in the sense that you've got two basically unelectable, what I call hair helmets, you know, guys with hair. You know, they when they swivel their heads, their hair stays in the same place. You got these two just totally interchangeable characters, And so it's going to be either way. It's like what do you want, mustard or mayo on your shit sandwich? You know, it's really, that's the choice you're looking at,
It's
you
terrible.
know.
It's terrible.
But
But
immigration,
I mean,
and go ahead, sorry.
I got to ask you, do you think that there will be any surprises in the UK elections, that maybe the both parties are even more unpopular than the media realizes?
Politics to me really is poison, and I know you follow the US scene closely because of
Yeah.
your coverage.
Well, it is poisonous.
But so I'm not paying that close attention. But of course, if you're a sentient being, then the information about this stuff comes to you anyway. It seems to me
Yeah,
that
sure.
the conservatives, the equivalent of the Republicans, cannot win this. It's just been won, and it doesn't look like they're really trying, to be honest. I think they're in that position I was talking about. They're thinking, we're going to sit this one out. And it's a poison chalice. It looks like Labour will probably win by default because, again, it's the lesser of two evils. It's kind of, well, we're not going to elect the Conservatives, therefore, being this two-party system, effectively, Labour's the only other choice. But it'll be just as dismal. But as to whether we'll get any surprises, it could happen. Certainly, if a Brexit is anything to go by, then the media will not necessarily present an accurate picture of what's happening out there, you know, in the streets, as it were. So it's possible that there could be some surprises, you know, in different seats going to like third parties. But I don't yet know what, like Nigel Farage, you mentioned him, what his party are doing really in the polls. You know, I'm not that interested, but we'll find out soon enough. But it is a very never been a more unstable, volatile situation, I would say. So I certainly wouldn't be putting a lot of money on any party. So we'll see. But I mentioned
Well,
it.
I just wanted to say about Europe and the war in Ukraine. Is this mad insistence on pretending that they're going to go rushing in there with NATO troops? You know, there's no way that NATO can marshal any kind of an army with any potency at all to go in there and assist the Ukrainians. It's absurd. You know, the UK especially, which, you know, I think has perhaps the smallest force, military force that it's had in decades. And, you know, the rest of them are really no better. And so it's very hard to understand why Olaf Scholz and Sunak and Macron and the whole gang are militating to make this war in Ukraine as bad as possible.
I think we'll just have to look at it as another manifestation of that psychosis that we're talking about. I
Yeah,
think
well, I guess.
looking
Sure.
at people that are actually certifiable, you know, I just don't recognize that humanity as I understand it in these people. It really is like a different race in some ways. I do want to, you know, I was rewatching the after Donald Sutherland died, I was rewatching the 1978 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and
Oh, yeah, great.
sometimes it feels like that's the sort of world we're living in. You know,
Absolutely. Like
these
their
people.
brains have been taken over by some strange alien force.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, the Ukraine thing is completely bizarre, but I mean, I think you've probably called it right when you said that if it doesn't tip over into some kind of real, like, kinetic military disaster, that there'll be some kind of fudge, and it'll go, you know, basically it'll go back to the way it was in some form before, you know, that Ukraine has been in the sphere of influence of Russia for a very long time. One of the things that got this whole mess going was the Ukrainian, you know, leadership, just sort of Western stooges, kind of shelling ethnic Russians within Ukrainian territory.
That was prompted by the US and the CIA and the State Department.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to destabilize Ukraine, thinking that they could use that as a launching pad to destabilize Russia and break up Russia into an even smaller set of sovereign entities than it is now, and destroy its economy and basically turn it into a third world part of the globe. But that was an extremely grandiose ambition and foolish. And the thing has turned into a giant fiasco. And what seems to be happening, luckily for the West, is that Vladimir Putin is showing the most amazing Christian patience of probably any leader faced with a similar situation in the last 150 years. And I think what he's intending to do is to try to turn Ukraine into a place that is not going to be a problem for him or his country or anybody else in the world, as was the case prior to 2014, when the USA destabilized it and intruded in its governance. And I think that he is going to try to conclude this military operation sooner rather than later. It would be to his advantage if he did it sooner rather than later, I think. The only question is, are the leaders of Western Civ mad enough, insane enough, to provoke him to some terrible enormity, like an exchange of nuclear missiles?
That concludes part one of our interview. Part two will be available soon in the subscribers area at legalizefreedom.com.
LegalizeFreedom.com